Lee against McAdory.
Please, the court, counsel. Now, as I suggest, there are two issues before the court in this request for habeas corpus relief, but I think it can be honed down into really two questions. First question involves the reasonableness or unreasonableness of the state court decision with regard to whether or not the admission of the hair expert testimony violated due process. The other issue is the use of perjured testimony, whether that testimony was perjured, and the ineffective assistance of counsel really boils down to a question of whether or not procedural default will bar review.
Could I just quickly ask why we don't have a complete trial transcript and how you think we can adequately assess Mr. Bowie's claims without it?
The transcripts were lost.
Are they lost for life?
That's what the county court told me, Judge. I would suggest there's probably a way of finding those notes from the court reporter and finding the court reporter, but because of a lack of funds and because of a lack of court orders, they were never completely produced.
Well, is it your view that we could adequately assess these claims without it?
I think you can, because the most important point in this case is brought out in the police reports, the investigative reports, and the laboratory reports that trial counsel didn't review, the trial counsel didn't use, and the evidence that didn't come into trial, notwithstanding the trial evidence that did come in. And that would be that broken piece of fingernail. With regard to whether or not the hair expert's testimony violated due process, there's no question about the facts. Judge Core recognized that this hair expert got up there and basically said, this hair came from this individual. I don't think there's any question about the science of hair evidence. We all know that that's not proper. It's not fingerprint evidence.
When you say we all know, you may have more knowledge on this than the rest of us. Why should we think that that is completely bogus? Prosecutor would know that was a lie.
The citations in the amended habeas corpus petition,
you don't go back to amended habeas corpus petitions. I look very carefully at your brief to see if it discusses the scientific literature, and it doesn't. Is there some place we should look in the scientific literature to see a confirmation of this proposition?
I believe it's cited in the Williams case, the district court and the appellate court case that talked about, basically some individuals talk about this as being junk science.
Being sent to what a judge says about the scientific literature isn't really the way to access scientific literature. Where should one look to find out what hair analysis does or doesn't do?
Well, Judge, quite frankly, I think I'm bound by the record, and the record is...
People can look at the existing published literature. That's why lawyers cite law review articles, and they also cite scientific articles in scientific literature. I'm just trying to figure out where one would go to beat a claim of everybody knows something, because I surely do not know it.
Well, in answer to your question then, Judge, I would suggest a Karen Korsberg, K-O-R-S-B-E-R-G, from the FBI lab. It doesn't appear in any of the filings. A few days ago, I got an email, though, that talked about her presentation in a court that basically would answer any questions that you have. I mean, I find it a little bit less.
You're already telling us that presentations in court are not the solution to things. Published peer-reviewed literature in scientific journals may, however, be helpful. Anyway, please go ahead.
I suggest that the law is really not in question, and I suggest that when you look at the entire context of the case, that there was a due process violation. Moving along to the procedural default.
But could I just say, I mean,
Yes, there was this dispute about the hair, and let's assume you're right and that everybody in the world knows that she overstated the strength of the link between that hair and potentially Mr. Bowie. The state courts evaluated this claim in a general way, and they also, maybe perhaps more importantly, evaluated the arguments about the confession. And hair or no hair, if you accept what the state courts concluded about the confession, it's hard to see how this claim can rise to the level of egregious error that the Anti-Terrorism Act requires for habeas relief.
Well, again, we have to then, or I have to direct your honors to the police reports that talk about evidence or information the police received.
I'm aware of those, but it just seems to me the state court was aware of them too, and would I just do the same thing with them? I don't know, but nobody's asking me to. I mean, I have to
The police reports never would have been entered into evidence at trial. Certain aspects of information that was contained in those police reports would be. I'm sure the Assistant Attorney General will get up here and say, this guy's not innocent, there was a confession in there. But when you look at the evidence that was presented, there was this woman by the name of Rosalie Pierce. Rosalie Pierce told investigating officers that she talked to the victim at 7 or 7:30 on the night that supposedly Bowie's confession said he killed the victim at 4 o'clock, so 3 hours earlier.
And did you make, I mean, I realize at this point you're trying to use the actual innocence ultimate safeguard in the statute. What kind of proffer did you make, or how has that claim, you can't just come in and say we're making an actual innocence claim and be relieved of procedural default and everything else. There's got to be something to support it.
Well, based on the pleadings and the habeas petition and the supplemental petition that included the lab reports and additional police reports, we have the information from Rosalie Pierce. That was stipulated at the motion to suppress, but it never came in at trial. There's another witness who saw a light on in the house at 9 o'clock, and when investigating police officers got there, there was no light. More importantly, the victim's husband himself said when the victim was found deceased, she was in her bed clothes, and those are clothes that she would have always put on between 9 and 10 o'clock at night. It is also inconsistent with Bowie's purported confession that he killed her in the process of trying to help her get a hook from the basement at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. But that information was never brought in at trial. The information that there was, the city visitor by the name of Rudy Brown, who checked the house but never found the victim, never mentioned anything about that alarm panel being torn off the back door and the wires being out that were found when subsequently police officers came in, the people found the body. No smell of gas. So you have all these inconsistencies in the testimony or the information documented in police reports that were never followed up by trial counsel. But again, the most important thing, the broken piece of fingernail. We could be doing our testimony on that now, but we don't have that. Clearly, when you look at this record, you know that there was a struggle that went on when this woman was killed. On that broken piece of fingernail, for the first time in habeas, we got the lab reports, we see that there's a blue fiber on there. This woman had a blue blouse pulled up over her head, she had blue tights that was used to gag her. I suggest there can't be any other conclusion that the killer broke that fingernail when he was in the process of killing her. And the police know for a fact, based on the police reports, that that fingernail did not come from Gerald Bowie, and that was never brought out at trial. So these facts that point to his innocence were never brought out. It's one thing I have to ask your honors to do is maybe look between the lines. We're talking about 1986. We're talking about the wife of the Chicago police officer, and this guy didn't get the death penalty. I think that has to tell you that there were some questions raised about the evidence in this case. I ask that you reverse the district court. Otherwise, this guy, who quite frankly is innocent, is going to spend the rest of his life in jail.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Iskowich.
Good morning, Your Honors. Mr. Eberhard, may it please the court. My name is David Iskowich with the Attorney General's Office on behalf of the respondent. None of the petitioner's claims can withstand scrutiny in habeas corpus in light of the rules regarding procedural default and cognizability of state law claims. And as I started out in my brief, as far as claim one is concerned, the question regarding the admissibility of evidence under state law is a state law concern and cannot possibly afford Mr. Bowie habeas relief unless the error was so egregious that it acted to deny him a fundamentally fair trial. The Illinois Appellate Court's opinion makes clear that the introduction of the hair evidence and in the manner in which it was introduced by the hair expert was entirely consistent and appropriate in light of prevailing state law.
My problem remains the question that I asked previously, and that is, I just think that the lack of a complete trial transcript here is a problem. I don't know how we give these claims total and full consideration without it. And is there no way to procure it?
Well, Your Honor, I might respectfully disagree that the total and full consideration here is appropriate, even in light of the default. But, Your Honor, I don't mean that to say that this court shouldn't look at the claims, but in light of the blatant defaults and the non-cognizability of issue one.
But it's only non-cognizable if, taking the record as a whole, that state evidentiary problem doesn't rise to the level of a due process violation. But what if we have no idea what the record as a whole says?
Well, Your Honor,
I mean, we're supposed to just wing it, you know, and start.
No, not wing it, Your Honor. The appellate court provides a concise and accurate and...
Well, how do I hear that? Maybe you're very nice. That's all the wonderful people. But, you know, we normally review records.
Right. And I don't know why the record wasn't filed in this case, although I trust that it has been.
Mr. Everett said it's lost. Did somebody find the court reporter?
I don't know where the record is, Your Honor.
And you never even tried to look at the record yourself, I take it.
It's not. I couldn't find the record, Your Honor.
What did you do to look for it?
The clerk's office was contacted. The First District Appellate Court's office was contacted. This is a 1985 or 1986 case, Your Honor, and it was not in any place where they would usually look to find it.
But in habeas, we frequently see cases of that age, if you will, and older.
Certainly, I agree with that, Your Honor. I don't know what else I can tell you other than that attempts were made to find it, and it was not found. I believe that the case, however, can be adjudicated fairly with reference to the state court's opinion and the pleadings provided by Mr. Buey in his state court litigation. And that goes to the faults of claims 2 and 3 and the purely state law nature of claim 1. Now,
what about his actual innocence claim, Mr. Everhart? And there are many troubling things in this record that don't really add up well, and of course I'm sure none of us wants an innocent man to sit around in prison for the rest of his life.
Of course not.
And yet if he's guilty, that's where he belongs. What do we do with this, particularly once again not knowing how much of this the trial court really knew? I mean, oftentimes you say, well, it was put before the trial court, the jury considered it, they rejected it, it was fairly adjudicated in the state court, and we move on. We don't worry about it. But we don't know that about any of these things.
Well, the police reports indicate that there were several inconsistencies. I grant that, of course. However,
wouldn't it make a difference to you if those were somehow brought to the attention of the trial court or the Illinois, well, the trial court, or not?
Well, let's look at a couple of them. The fingernail, for instance. Mr. Buey claims that it could have come only from the victim or the killer. This is purely speculative. We don't know this. We don't know where the fingernail came from. It could have been there for weeks or days before the crime was committed. Could have been dropped after the crime.
Without a complete trial transcript, it's impossible to even know if the fingernail itself was presented at trial.
I know that it wasn't by this fact, Your Honor. One of the claims which Mr. Buey makes in his habeas petition is that counsel was ineffective for not procuring and introducing that evidence at trial. Therefore, going by that claim, it wasn't introduced at trial.
You see, maybe he made that up. Maybe you're right. In other words, now you're believing him on this one issue? You're believing him?
I'm not believing him.
Other issues, you're not
believing him? No, I'm not believing him. That's the merits of the claim, Your Honor. I'm just saying that he claims that it wasn't introduced.
But then you say, so, you know, we have to rely on it. Do you see the problem?
If I might go back to several of the other pieces of evidence which Mr. Buick brought up here, the alarm panel being ripped out and the gas being on in the house when the police officers arrived and people before that arrived, I think one thing to note from this confession, and I think that this confession is not only is it unchallenged here, but the contents of the confession were entirely consistent with the scene of the crime. The officers responding to the scene of the crime found that the gas was on, the alarm panel was ripped out. There were no fingerprints at the scene of the crime. The weapon was missing. Mr. Buick, in his confession, indicated to police officers that he did, in fact, rip the alarm panel out. He turned the gas on in some attempt to hide fingerprints.
I think I misunderstood something. Weren't there five unidentified fingerprints?
There were five unidentified prints, none of which matched Mr. Buick.
Right.
He, however, told the police in his confession that immediately upon murdering the victim, he wiped the area clean of prints, put on a pair of black gloves, and proceeded to ransack the bedroom at that point. That's what his confession said. So that would explain the lack of his prints in the house. He also claimed that he bagged the evidence of the crime scene, such as the weapon and other certain items, such as a broken bottle, which the victim attempted to defend herself with, and dumped them off in various locations in the city of Chicago. He attempted to take police to those locations to recover that evidence, but it had occurred that the evidence had been removed by sanitation people before they could recover it.
Or whatever. Why don't we just say nothing was found? Because we don't know if it was ever there or not there.
Right.
It is a fact in the record that they went to these locations and there was nothing.
Correct.
So we don't know whether it's because there never was anything there or because Chicago sanitation workers moved things. We have no idea.
The police report does indicate that the police did contact Chicago sanitation, and the sanitation had removed garbage at that area after the time that you were talking about before.
Remove one bag, and they probably went on your regular garbage.
They went on their entire route and removed it and dumped the entire dumpster.
Yeah.
If there's no further questions, Your Honors, I appreciate your time and respect for the request of this court affirm. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Anything further, Mr. Everhart?
Yes, Judge. The interesting thing about false confessions are they do comport with everything that the police know or find at a crime scene. And it's interesting to note that Mr. Biskowitz talks about how the defendant or petitioner in this case talked about the fingerprints being wiped clean, and there were five unidentified prints left at the scene. And I'm going to go back to Rosalie Pierce and other individuals that were interviewed, and I believe that the review of the police reports will show that those witnesses surfaced after the time that this confession, reported confession, was made. As much as I like the Attorney General agreeing with me on certain issues and this court relying on me, I'll do something I've never done before. I'll ask the court to order the Circuit Court of Cook County to produce the record. I think it could be done with a check of the Circuit Court file and the Appellate Court file, because the court reporters are listed on a document statement in state court, and those records can be produced so that a trial transcript can be reproduced. Quite frankly, I couldn't do it in the district court on habeas. We didn't have the funds. We didn't have the means to do that.
Did you actually make a request and were turned down, or you didn't make a request because you knew you couldn't pay for it?
I made some requests to the clerk's office, who basically wouldn't talk to me because I did not have court orders.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And again, I asked the clerk to do that.
Thank you very much, counsel.
Thank you.
We appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment in this case.